Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm and author of Investing Simplified, the book. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial show in America, with a financial advisor, an estate planning attorney, and a CPA to answer your questions for free, and is broadcast live from Portland, Oregon on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck with a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com. Or you can call him right now at 503-417-9595. That's 503-417-9595. Or for our long distance and podcast listeners, you can call toll free at 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We also want to welcome all of you in the Phoenix area who are listening to us for the first time live, because our show is now live there thanks to Daylight Savings Time. And so now we're not only live in the Portland, Oregon area, but also in Phoenix, Arizona. And we welcome your calls. If you want to pick up the phone and call and ask us a question, you can call at 503-417-9595 or toll free 877-733-1011. 1011, and that's good anywhere in the continental United States and Hawaii. Maybe we'll get a call from Hawaii. Who knows? But welcome to the show. And this morning, I'm going to have a special guest on. Kevin will be calling in. I think Carl will be calling in later. But we're going to have a special guest. As we do the third Saturday every month, we have somebody from Dent Research. And today, we're going to have with us Rodney Johnson, who is also a author and a co-editor of the free newsletter Economy and Markets Daily. Rodney is a great guy. I got to tell you, I enjoy Rodney's book. He's got a book, Goodbye Sanity, Hello Irrationality. And Rodney, are you on the line?
Yes, I am, Chuck. And I can't believe they let you do this by yourself today.
Well, I'll tell you, they let me out of the house, so what can I say? Hey, you know, speaking about house, I understand we're catching you in the middle of a move.
I am packing up my house. The movers should be here in just about an hour, and so the timing is working out perfectly as we wrap things in bubble wrap, and then the phone rang, and it's like, that's the radio, so here we are.
Yeah, that's what you call perfect planning, right?
Well, you know, and it's the perfect plans is, you know, the old saying of generals, you know, no battle plan survives the first shot.
Yeah, for sure.
And hopefully this one will go well today. We'll see what happens.
Well, you know, I was I had talked to you last month, and we'd kind of talked briefly about Harry's part that came out about that the economy will never be the same. The housing will never be the same, and commercial real estate will never be the same.
Yes, and his point is that you have to have demand for those things. You have to have demand for housing by a new generation, but it has to build new homes and to have that rising demand, the younger people have to outnumber the older people. And as Harry puts it, you have to have more buyers than dyers. You have to have more people buying homes than people who are dying off and selling homes or selling property. Because if it's at equilibrium, well, then where's the pressure? And if there's more people who are dying, if there's more people in the older set like they have in Japan, then there is no pressure on real estate. You get some regional pressure, there's no question, which you have up there in the Northwest, certainly in the Portland and Seattle area, and they certainly have in San Francisco for the high tech and different things. But in general, you have more real estate available than people want because there just aren't that many people. And so we've been in this kind of slow track of not much new supply coming on. And when you look at housing starts last week, Yes, single-family homes are about 850,000. It is an increase from last year. But you got to remember that the peak back in 2005, 2006 was over 1.2, 1.3 million. We're still just two-thirds of that. And so we don't have a lot of supply hitting the market. And I think it's because the builders who study this and look at all these trends, obviously, and got killed in the last downturn are saying, wait a second, we don't need to do that again. Let's try and keep supply matching with demand so that we don't oversupply and really kill the markets like we did before.
Well, I'll tell you, we've got a horrendous lot of building going on up here in the Northwest. And you're right, it's kind of a pocket area, and it's booming like crazy right now.
Right, and what happens, of course, is you have the population isn't spread equally across the nation. We all know that. And so people gather to centers typically for jobs, but also some for vacation and just for interest. And there's not a lot of people who work in Miami. Miami tends to be a finance center because it's a lot of wealthy people who have a second, third, or fourth home. A lot of money from Brazil and Germany is in Miami. And so there are a lot of empty houses. Well, real estate is booming right now. It's well beyond what it was in terms of the price per square foot in the last boom. But the question is, how long can that last? It's not driven by people who are working in the area and are going to keep it going with their income. As soon as wealthier people who are deciding that's where they want to be turn their interest somewhere else, it all fades away. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I've lived here my entire life in the Northwest, so I love it because I've lived here my whole life. My family's here and everything else, and I'd be lost anywhere else. However, I have to admit that during the winter, I find it very great to head down to Phoenix or down to Tucson and play a little golf or down to Palm Springs and get the heck out of Dodge for a while, because we have 6 months of rainy, dark, cold weather. And it's amazing, though, that I have a lot of people coming in that are retiring and are moving to the Northwest. And they're moving here because of lifestyles, also mm-hmm. moving here because of partly because of the weather, because we do have, we're an hour and a half to the ocean. We're an hour to some of the greatest skiing in the world. We're 2.5 hours to high desert country. You know, so we're really centrally located where people can get, and as is Seattle, too. Seattle has the same advantage, except Seattle's right there on the water. But the Pacific Northwest is getting a lot of retirees coming in here, but I think a lot of them are going to have a little culture shock the first winter they spend here.
Well, and it's interesting you say that. The boomers have not retired. Some of them have. The very front end of the boomers, we count boomers being the bottom of the birth curve. I understand that it's people who share a social view that started really with babies born in 1946. But if you look at the bottom of birth, it was 1937, and then births started to increase from there. And so that first group, of course, is 60, 70 years old, and they're moving along, have retired, most of them. But the bulk of the boomers were born in the 50s. And the last of them were born in the early 60s. Those people have not retired yet. And so we're going to have this huge number of people who are retiring. Most of them will remain where they lived. Over 65% of people so far retire and stay in the same town where they worked and lived for their adult lives. But you have this other 35% that's going to go somewhere. And so you're seeing a market increase in people coming your way. And I'm certain the numbers are bigger, right, because it's an attractive area, as you described. But if you look at the traditional retirement areas, the Phoenixes, South Florida, certainly the Carolinas, the parts south where the weather is, a little bit better in the winter, those places are just going to get crushed with more people coming in. And it's going to be very interesting to see what happens to the desirable real estate on the water in Florida, in the foothills around Asheville, North Carolina, and places like that, as this higher number of people retire and start moving that direction.
Yeah, well, one of the advantages we still have is our value of our property is still not anywhere near the area of San Francisco or Seattle.
Right.
Or,
right.
Sacramento. And so you can retire and move here and still buy a reasonably sized place for a reasonable price.
You can today. We'll see what happens over the next 10 years.
Yeah, you can today. That's the key word, today. Well, Rodney, I got to ask you, President Trump has been in office now, 2 months?
Yep.
He appears to be having Obamacare replacement and cancellation and replacement going. They're moving along. But, you know, I do see a general upswing in the attitude of investors. And all the polls are showing how much more of a positive attitude people have about the future. But one of the things, you know, we've discussed and talked about is one of the things that concerns me is the national debt. Now, the one thing I watch the national debt every week, and I usually report it on our show, or I always report it in my newsletter. But the national debt actually over the last 3 weeks has come down. I've been watching it on the national debt clock.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually moving in a positive direction, not a negative direction anymore. It's actually starting to rescind and actually decrease, which is kind of a nice thing to see on there, because I've been watching it. Just the damn thing keeps going up, 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 and I'm thinking, holy cow, what do we do when we get to, you know?
Don't get too comfortable with that. The national debt is, you can think of it as the national credit card, of course. And it's just like your own credit card in a way. We have to pay ours off. They don't. But if you keep charging more every month, but then you make a bit of a payment on the 15th, well, on the 16th, things are going to look a little bit brighter. But by the first of the next month, you're going to be adding to it again. And we just had corporate taxes due on March 15th. And so just ahead of that, just after that, you get this influx of money coming from corporate tax payments that's going to push it down a little. And we'll get the same thing around April 15 when individual taxes, which, of course, is much bigger, hit. We'll see the national debt come down, but it'll be a blip. The overall flow is still more deficit, more debt, marching higher. And the federal government, of course, reached the debt ceiling, I want to say, a couple of days ago. I think it was the 15th.
Yeah.
And what they'll do, and they've already started doing, is taking what they call extraordinary measures to keep paying their bills. And they do things like take money from the Postal Service Pension Fund, and they replace it with an IOU and say, you know, we'll give you your money back when we get money flowing again. And they do that with several different funds that they raid, savings funds that they raid, that should take them through the fall. But to your bigger point, you know, the national debt, very important. It means we owe money. But as people point out, it's been growing and growing, and we're still kind of clicking along. So how far can it go? No one knows that answer. But it can't go forever. We just don't know where the end game is.
Well, yeah, we're just like a big balloon. We're just getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and someday it's not going to be able to expand anymore.
Right, and I didn't – at $10 trillion with a T – I didn't think it would go to 15, and at 15, I didn't think it would go to 20, and now we're at 20. So, you know, clearly, we all believe, we being, you know, everyone on the planet, and I don't mean every single person, but enough people believe that the ongoing concern of the United States and all the other developed nations who are loaded with debt are strong enough, viable enough, or frankly, they don't have any other choice, that they stay involved. And that's where we are. And it's that old thing of you can't just say, no, we're not, because you have to have an alternative. So what's the alternative? Well, to stop adding to the deficit, so you stop adding to the debt, so that you start whittling it down. What does that look like? Well, as we're finding out from the latest budget that was put forth, it's very painful to some people.
Oh, and it's going to get more painful.
Yep.
And if that thing blew up, it'd be real painful.
Well, and that's the other side. What is it? Would the only... It's not comfort, but if you look at it and say, well, okay, what do you anticipate happening? The United States has a lot of debt. I get that, but we're not the only one. Our debt is about 100% of GDP, just a touch more now, about 105%. So we're running, call it $20 trillion in overall debt, and our GDP is around $19.5 trillion. But the Japanese are at 230 to 250% of GDP with their national debt. And so there are other countries that are well ahead of us in the amount of debt they have outstanding, and their economy is not nearly as strong as ours. And ours isn't great. I mean, GDP the first quarter is now expected to be around 1%. One, and that's after the fourth quarter was nasty. And so we're not just running gangbusters, but we're ahead of other people. and we have a lower debt-to-GDP ratio than they do. And so my point is, I expect others to fail before we do, and so we should be getting warning signs from other places around the world.
Yeah, and the bad part is, though, that once they start tumbling, you just got to be prepared.
Exactly right, Chuck. Yeah. It's a domino. And the problem is, how fast do they fall? Because money flows around the world very, very quickly. And if someone said, hey, you know, country A, B, and C are falling, everyone's looking at D, E, and F. And a lot of people are looking all the way down at X, Y, and Z. And so you could see everyone's debt reset. And you know, the question is, what does that mean? It means interest rates climb very quickly. I mean, I don't mean from, you know, last week the Federal Reserve moved interest rates from, it's a range, 0.5% to, you know, 0.75%. They moved it up to 0.75% to 1% in short term. I mean, it would move in stair step from 1% to 3% in a matter of a week if people got worried about this sort of thing. And the long end would be, it's around 3.2% right now. It would run to 6 to 9. I mean, it would be a big move very fast if people got worried about the debts of nations.
Well, one of the, I guess on the more positive side from a stock market standpoint, the stock market's added about $3 trillion of net worth to the value of the stock markets since the election. And the overall, for the first time, I think the highest in 15 years, consumer confidence is the highest it's been in 15 years, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, and it's... I have this conversation a lot, as you might expect, right? Because, as I just mentioned a minute ago, GDP isn't growing like crazy right now. It's just not. And yet, the stock market is running very fast, and consumer confidence is running very high. Well, I mean, President Trump has annoyed many, many people, clearly. And he puts out his tweets and does these things and says things that are just, you know, they're infuriating, they're maddening, they're whatever they are. And a lot of people disagree with him on social issues. If you look at what he has put through Congress so far, and it's not a new law, it's repealing regulations, and it is changing guidance of the agencies, where he's telling the agencies don't defend certain regulations that have been challenged in court, like, you know, the EPA regulation on overseeing water that's within 4,000 feet of navigable water. That sounds like something that's kind of technical, which I guess it is, but it affects a lot of people who do business in terms of farmers and ranchers and things. And he told the auto industry, look, we are not going to push the requirement that you move the mileage of your fleet to, I think it was 50 miles per gallon or 53 by 2025, which means, as they've been doing now, they're pushing out money-losing cars that are certainly better for the environment in terms of low emission or zero emission with electrical, but it's very expensive because they're losing money on all of them. And so all of these things make it easier for businesses to operate, cheaper for them to operate. They capture more profit, makes the companies more valuable. Maybe not today, maybe not over the next week, but over the next 4 years or even 8 years, it could add a lot. And that's what I think investors are focusing on, saying, hey, wait a second, we have somebody very friendly to business. You may hate his social views, I get that, but it could add to the business side, which is flowing through into stocks.
Well, you know, one of the concerns I have about electric cars, and everything I've heard from everybody on both sides of the aisle, is about the fact that our electric grid is in deep trouble. It really isn't that sound. We're not that well protected. Well, if we're not producing, if we can't produce enough electricity for our homes and everything, how are we going to produce any electricity for cars? I mean, well, it seems to me like we're going to have to come up with some kind of an alternative source to get the electricity for cars if our grid were to go out.
Yeah, the security of the grid is different from the ability to produce. We can produce a ton of electricity, but is the grid safe from somebody who wants to do us harm, wants to bring down part of it, that sort of thing? Ted Koppel actually wrote a book on this a couple of years ago. Very interesting. So far, electric cars are less than 1% of the American fleet, and so we're in no danger of this anytime soon. What I find very interesting about electric cars is not that we're, you know, at some critical mass point where people are going to start buying them. People are buying fewer of them. People buy Teslas because they're cool, they're sexy, they go really fast, and they represent kind of a high-end look, people aren't buying Priuses right now. They're not buying the Nissan Leaf right now. They're certainly not buying the Chevy Bolt or the new or Chevy Volt or the new Chevy Bolt because gasoline is cheaper, and so they just don't have that attraction that they did several years ago. It's the battery to me that's all that's the thing. We're not making great strides forward in battery commercialization right now, but when we do. When we're actually able to store more of the power that we can create, wind, sun, passive areas, and other things, because that's the problem right now. We can generate a lot when the sun shines. We just don't store it very well. When we can do that, and we can, you and I can have a battery in our home that is viable to just put in the garage, store electricity when it's cheap to make, even if it's the same natural gas plant down the road making it, if our battery can take it and store it at 2 in the morning when use is near zero, and then it can pull from the battery in the middle of the day when use is high, that is a game changer. And that's what all these companies are looking for, is the next generation of battery, be it solid state lithium ion, which I think is probably the most probable, to all sorts of other things that are out there. And that's when we can decentralize power storage. Boy, then we got something to talk about that I find clearly, you know, exciting.
Yeah, and those kind of technologies are going to have to happen if that's going to be the main source. And I can tell you, I know somebody that owns a Tesla, and I've ridden in it, and I can tell you they are very nice cars.
Absolutely, but for $100,000, it had better be really nice.
Well, that's my whole point. I looked at it and I thought, you know, for the money. No, I don't think so. I just think it's too much, but oh well. If you know, here's the thing. It's the old adage, if you're willing to pay it, if some fool's willing to pay it, then you can sell it at that price.
Right. And the greater issue with Elon Musk and Tesla is, you know, you buy a car for $100,000, that's nice and everything. He loses money on those cars. Which we know to be true because Tesla sells its zero emission tax credits to the other car manufacturers so that they can maintain the mileage of their fleet. And so Tesla's profit, which, you know, sometimes they make one, sometimes they don't, Tesla's profit is less than the amount of tax credit that they sell to other companies, meaning that their own operations lose money. It is what it is.
We're not near a point
even with a $100,000 car that they're going to make money yet.
How can you run a company like that?
Well, clearly you can go to the market and you can keep selling more stock and you can keep selling debt. And that's exactly what they're doing. The rumor is they're going to do it again. I was kind of out of the loop the last couple of days. I don't know if they announced. But for their Model 3 ramp up, they're going to have to raise more capital in the billions to get that production online, and people are willing to invest.
And this is for that $40,000 model?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I know I have several clients who have ordered them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What? I want to say 300,000 or 400,000 people, if I remember correctly, put their money down.
Yeah, and all you had to really do was, I think, put something like 10% down.
Yeah, I don't remember the number, but yeah. I thought it was even smaller than that. But still, it's a level of interest, and I clearly believe people are interested, but I still struggle with how they're going to make money at that level. We'll see.
You know, most of us have always thought, if you're going to build an electric car, at least have it look cool.
Yeah.
A Prius does not look cool. It looks like a box on wheels, you know? And so I think one of the problems the electric car makers have, and that's where I think Tesla kind of hit the sweet spot, their cars look cool.
Absolutely. And the others in the range, I mean, I like the Fisker. I thought that was a beautiful car. And so there were two or three others. The Faraday is kind of nifty, but nobody has the mass that Tesla has. And like I said, even he's not making money. So we'll see if it works out.
Maybe he'll do better sending rocket ships to the moon.
Yeah.
Well, listen, Rodney, we appreciate your time today, and I hope your move goes smoothly. And we'll be talking to you maybe in another month. Who knows? Either you or Rod or Harry. But I hope you have a great move, and I hope things go perfectly well, and I hope the movers don't break anything.
Thank you so much, and next time I'll report to you from Texas.
Okay, great. We'll talk to you then. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Investing Simplified, and we're going to come back with the tax investigator. We have Kevin Stege on the line, and we'll be right back to Investing Simplified.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask Kevin Stege, CPA and shareholder of the Baker Coulson CPA firm, that tax question that's been keeping you up at night. You can call Kevin 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's the CPA with the tax answers, Kevin Stege.
Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified. Kevin, have we got you on the line there?
We sure do. How are you doing, Chuck?
Great. How about you?
Very good. Well, that was a great segment you had with Rodney there.
Well, thank you. It's a little lonely in here. I'm used to having company.
Yeah, you know, sometimes that happens, but you're doing just fine.
I feel like Rodney Dangerfield.
No respect, right?
Yeah, there you go. There you go. No, I'm glad you called in, and what's happening in the tax world?
Well, you know, taxes are behind this year, and I'm not just saying Baker & Coulson. I'm saying at the IRS in general, they've indicated they're about 10% behind receiving returns this year as opposed to last. And so that's a kind of an interesting phenomenon. Not exactly sure why, but that's kind of the way things are right now in the tax world. But that just means there's a little bit more rush than usual at the end for people who don't want extensions, and maybe a few more extensions are filed, so really not quite the end of the world, I guess.
You know, Kevin, I got to ask you, because we haven't had a chance to talk, and so I'm just kind of asking you this off the cuff. So, but when they released Trump's records this past week on him making $150 million and only paying $38 million, or 24.1%, I think it was, percent, I think he could use a little Baker Coulson help.
You know, I'm not quite so sure. I saw a little bit of that, but frankly, I haven't, other than working out my NCAA tournament brackets, I haven't had much of my head in the news or anywhere else. So I haven't had a chance to look at that, although usually I like to follow those things up, kind of see, you know, analyze what the tax return was about and how it happened and what was what strategies were employed, you know, to either pay that rate or, you know, possibly pay too much. So,
well, he certainly paid way higher than many of his competitors,
mm-hmm,
including
mm-hmm.
Mitt Romney. I mean, you know, Romney paid about half of that.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, very interesting. Hey, speaking about the tournament.
Yes.
I would assume you have your Oregon Ducks going all the way, don't you?
Well, you know, you have to be pragmatic about these things if you want to, you know, win the office pool and have bragging rights for the year. So I don't have them going all the way, but I have them going most of the way.
Oh, well, I've got a good friend with Gonzaga, and they're going all the way.
Ah, very good. Very good. Yeah.
It would be nice to have a Northwest school get to the Final Four and win it, wouldn't it?
It would be. It's the Pac-12 or Gonzaga would be awfully nice.
Yeah, I'd like to see the Pac-12, although I I really think Oregon probably at the end of the day, and maybe UCLA, probably the two best.
Yeah, Arizona looks pretty good,
Arizona's
too.
Good, too, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
Arizona has the ability just to reload. Even when they change coaches, they just reload and keep going.
Yep, absolutely, they do. Well, hey, today on the Tax Investigator, I thought I would talk a little bit about a particular strategy that is not for everyone, but might interest a number of people, especially those who have a home that they are thinking about renting. And here's kind of the background to this strategy. Basically, you have a principal residence that you've lived in for a number of years, and obviously, one of the best provisions in the tax code is Section 121 that allows you to exclude your gain on the sale up to $500,000 for a married couple when you sell it once every 2 years if you live there 2 out of 5 years and you own it 2 out of 5 years. And that's just a great provision in the code and really should be looked at to be utilized as best a person can. Well, when you convert a home to a rental for whatever reason, there's a number of reasons you can do that. Maybe you've just purchased a new home, a bigger or a smaller home, and you don't want to get rid of that other home and you want to keep it around, or maybe it's just a great home for renting and you want to go ahead and rent it. But there's one problem with having a home that you've owned as your principal residence for all of these years and converting it to a rental. Actually, there's two problems. One is you're going to start losing the gain exclusion, the Section 121 exclusion. It's going to start fading away on you over the years, and pretty soon there's not going to be a whole lot left for you to exclude when you end up selling that rental. And the other problem is, and this is the big one, is when you convert a residence to a rental, for depreciation, you have to use your original basis, not the fair market value. So let's say you bought a home for $200,000 20 years ago, and now it's worth $450,000, and you want to convert it to a rental. Well, your basis for depreciation is $200,000, so you make a little allocation to land and you start depreciating the rest over 27 years. Well, how can you get that $200,000 up to $450,000? The fair market value of when you're making this conversion. Well, what you can do is sell it to a entity that you own. And so the strategy would be you form, say, a little S-corp, and you contribute enough money in that S-corp to make a proper down payment, and this S-corp is actually going to buy your residence. And you, as the personal owner of it, you're going to sell it to your residence. You're going to take the Section 121 exclusion on $250,000 a gain. You've just basically stepped up the basis by doing an arm's-length transaction to an entity that you own. And now the entity gets to start depreciating it and renting it at $450,000. So pretty good strategy. There's a number of little snakes involved, and we won't go into all of those, but that's definitely something for people to consider that's a big difference to be able to take a higher amount of depreciation, in this case over double, and that's not an unreasonable scenario. So that is something to consider. Also, you might think that, well, hey, if I can sell it for $450,000, why don't I sell it to my entity for $700,000 all the way up to the maximum exclusion, and then now I get to depreciate $700,000? Well, that's the stuff court cases are made of. That's the stuff jail time's made of. You need to do things at a true arm's length transaction, probably. If you at least don't get an appraisal, definitely get a comparative market analysis from your realtor to establish what that fair market value is. So that is the Tax Investigator for today, at least on converting a residence to a rental.
Wow, great advice. But remember, when you do that transaction, You're also the guy that's paying both ways on it.
Meaning?
Well, if you're going to sell your house, you're going to sell your house for cash, right?
Well, it can be a note. You can do a long-term note so that the entity is buying it from you on an installment basis, so you get the rent income coming in.
Okay.
And then you use that to
make the payments.
Exactly.
Yeah, but you still are obligated to pay the loan.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. So, yeah, you're kind of financing your own transaction.
You absolutely are.
Yeah, but like you said, you can leverage a lot of tax-free capital gain there, which is, and move the cost basis, which is well worth it.
Exactly right. And hopefully, if your entity misses a payment, you're not going to be suing yourself for back rent.
Well, let's hope not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you said, those are the things court cases are made of.
That's exactly right.
Kevin, I know you've got a ton of tax stuff to do today, and appreciate you calling in. Hope you have your aspirin and a little chocolate sitting on the side there to give you energy for the day. And I'm sure you've got a mountain of work to do.
Well, I certainly do, and I can hold on for another segment.
Great!
If need be, I don't hear any callers or see any texts coming on the line, but I am definitely available for the rest of the show for answering any questions that may call in.
Okay.
Then
we'll put you on hold here, and we're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back to Investing Simplified. If you've got a tax question, you want to pick up the phone and call and ask Kevin, you can call 503-417-9595. You people in Arizona can even call in, toll-free 877-733-1011. We'll be right back with Investing Simplified.
Hi, I'm Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney and co-host of the radio program Investing Simplified. I recently left the Warren Allen Law Firm to open my own office. Professional and personable service have always been the hallmarks of my practice. I believe that this move will allow me to spend more time with my clients. For more than 37 years, it has been my privilege to assist clients with practical estate planning with wills, trusts, powers of attorney, advance directives, and other documents, so that they may have peace of mind knowing that their affairs are in order. When probate becomes necessary, emotions of family members may become fragile. Having an experienced attorney that can empathize with what the client is going through makes the process much easier. My new office is conveniently located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 101, just across from Mall 205, and my phone number is 971-229-0585. That's 971-229-0585.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that tax question answered. Call Chuck or Kevin now at 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's Chuck Price and Kevin Stege.
Well, Kevin, I don't know. I think it's your magic voice, but the phone lines have lit up like a Christmas tree. We've got about 7 lines lit up. And first caller here is Tim. You got a question about back taxes.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. How about you, Tim?
Good. I owe the federal government back taxes, federal taxes, and I've been ignoring it for several years. And I know I need to take care of it, but I always see these ads on TV about these attorneys that'll talk it down and get you a lower price. But I know the name of the game is they're going to get a good chunk out of it, too. Do I really need to hire an attorney to try and get a lower fee out of the federal government?
Kevin, did you hear that?
I did hear that. That's a great question, Tim, and it's there's no one-size-fits-all answer. However, there are some general rules of thumb on this. The first rule of thumb is there's really two programs to help with your back taxes. One is basically just a payment program that spreads it out to make it manageable. This is pretty pretty standard. The installment agreement's pretty standard. There's a process to go through. I have found that they're fairly reasonable in terms of looking at your ability to pay and how much you can pay and getting something set up. The other program, and this is the one you hear talked about a lot, is going to be the Offer and Compromise program or the Fresh Start Initiative. There's a number of different ways they've called it. It used to be extremely difficult to get an offer and compromise, which basically is saying that, hey, I owe $20,000 to the IRS. I'm going to offer $5,000, and they're going to accept that in full payment of the $20,000, and I'm done. They have made it more doable, if you will, but it's still very difficult to get that particular. If you have any way of paying back your debt over the course of at least 10 years, they're going to not come down off of how much you owe. If you are fully disabled, if you cannot work, if your income literally is just X amount and it's not going to pay the debt, now they're going to listen. And so it's really pretty cut and dried. And there is a place to address that and have a professional take a look at that. So it may be worth initially looking at, but I don't know the programs that are on TV exactly. How much they're charging and that type of a thing. But they're pretty difficult to get the actual offer and compromises to be accepted.
Unfortunately, I can't afford to pay it, so I probably won't get the deduction.
Mm-hmm. So then probably the best thing is there may be certain circumstances that you could, I don't want to say that that's, cut and dried your situation, definitely working out an installment agreement where they're not going to be, taking assets out from under you and stuff. That's the way to go then.
Sure. Well, I appreciate your help. Thank you.
Good question, Tim. We got another caller, Daniel, on the line, tax saving and primary residence. Daniel?
Hello.
Hi.
I had a quick question for you. I've got a wraparound mortgage. So I'm not on title, but will the IRS look at that as if it's my primary residence? I'm living there, but I'm not on title at this time. Do I need to be on title for that 2 year, those 2 years to start?
Yes, you do. For the Section 121 exclusion, you do need to be one of the owners, and I would say that is cut and dried. Even though the substance is you're living there, if you're not an owner on there, I would say that is going to fail if you try to take the exclusion. So definitely try to get
it's a wraparound mortgage, though. So it's a wraparound. He's carrying the note. So it's a contract to sell. So it's technically, I'm not on title, but I do have ownership interest in the property.
Oh, okay. I would want to look at that closer. Honestly, off the top of my head, I'm not exactly sure if that's going to give you ownership or not. I would have to look at that closer.
Okay. And would that be something I talk to you or an attorney about?
I would, probably. Not me before April 15th, but sometime afterwards I could take a look. But definitely, an attorney, a good real estate attorney, should be able to know that aspect of things.
Okay, appreciate it.
Good. Thanks, Daniel. Good call. We've got Sandy has a question about property and retirement. Sandy?
Hi, what's the best way to handle a home owned in a self-directed IRA? I bought it with the intention of turning it into a group home, as in a Alzheimer care home, and I'm getting all kinds of conflicting advice about how to set up a corporation, or can I or can't I?
Well,
I have a mortgage on this house and how to refinance the mortgage.
That's about as complicated a question as it gets. If that home is owned in an if it's owned in an IRA, there's that's something you need to sit down with all of the details with somebody. What you're planning on doing, how things are titled, who the owners are, and then start putting a plan together for getting from A to B. So that's a big question.
Okay, I'm sorry. Thank you.
No, very good for calling. And, if you're interested in having somebody take a look at that, we can't probably right now sit down and give you the time since we're just doing taxes. But after April 15th, we could sit down and take a look at what you've got going and see, we could be a good place to start to see who else you need to get involved to, put your plan into place. But, there's always a way to get from A to B. Sometimes it's not easy, but you got to start somewhere. But definitely feel free to give Baker and Colson a call and after tax season, and we'll give you some time to really sit down and get you going on this.
Okay, and what would that contact number be?
Our phone number is 503-666-5569.
Thank you. Have a blessed day.
Okay,
yeah,
great.
Thanks
for calling.
We've got Jack on the line. He's got a question about bonds and interest. Jack?
Hello. We have some large Series EE bonds that were bought in 1986 that matured in 2016. And people tell me that you don't have to claim the interest until you cash the bonds. And others tell us that we have to at least claim the interest in 2016's taxes or there's a penalty. So my question is, can we wait to claim the interest when we cash the bonds, or do we have to claim the interest on the 2016 taxes?
Okay. I unfortunately didn't catch the whole scenario. Just a slight breakup on reception.
Okay. He had some savings bonds that matured in 2016. And what he was been told that he needs to, even though he doesn't take the interest, he needs to file that and claim the interest in 2016 when it matures. But my understanding on savings bonds, you can keep them. You just don't get any more interest. The money will sit there sheltered, and when you cash them out, you got to pay the tax on it.
I think you're spot on that. It's when you cash them out, not when they mature.
Yes, because they, now, of course, it's dead money.
Yeah, it's not earning any more interest, Jack, and that's your penalty.
It would be more comfortable to pay the interest, although we need to do it soon because it is, it's not drawing anything now, but we were afraid there might be a penalty if we don't claim the interest on our 2016 taxes, but so you then feel we don't have to pay we don't have to claim, in other words, whenever we cash them, then we report the interest.
Correct.
That's most likely correct. You should get a 1099 from the U.S. Treasury stating either interest paid or interest accrued, and then however you elected to report those, whether you were going to report them every year or you were going to accrue it and wait, you would follow that method. But most likely, if you just hold them, you haven't created the transaction for any of the accrued interest to be taxable yet.
Okay. All righty. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break and come right back with the some more of calls. If you want to call in, we've got a couple of lines opened up still. 503-417-9595. Toll free 877-733-1011. We'll be right back to wrap up Investing Simplified.
Simplify. When you have questions about your health, you go to a doctor, right? But when it comes to your financial health, like what investments will give you the best return, why are you talking to your spouse's cousin Lou? You need Chuck Price, the financial doctor. Chuck Price knows investing is not a one-size-fits-all approach. It's about what's best for your financial health. Sure, investing can be complex, but like your medical doctor, Chuck Price makes the complex simple, so you understand exactly what you're doing and why you're doing it. Sign up for our free newsletter and see our free videos at AskTheFinancialDoctor.com or call 503-253-3000 and make an appointment for a free financial checkup. We'll give you the facts and our honest advice. Then, make your own decision. Nothing against your spouse's cousin Lou, but we've been helping people for over 40 years.
We do investing simplified.
Chuck Price, the financial doctor. Call 503-253-3000.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that tax question answered. Call Chuck or Kevin now at 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's Chuck Price and Kevin Stege.
Well, Kevin, the phones aren't lit up. I guess the magic ended. But anyway, we appreciate those people who called and asked questions. We got a few minutes left here, and Kevin, how does somebody get a hold of you?
Yes, very good. We're at baker-colson.com on the web, and our phone number again is 503-666-5569, and we're located out the east side of Gresham on Division Street.
And Carl Jepson, our estate planning attorney, is available at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 101, Portland, Oregon, and his phone number is 971-229-0585. And you can reach me at Price Financial Group Wealth Management at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103. We're at 503-253-3000 or toll-free 877-50-PRICE. And again, on the web at pfgwm.com, where incidentally, you can also go there and listen to past shows that we have a library there of all our previous shows. And I do want to mention that we do have a special offer for our listeners, some of them who, you know, may not listen in Arizona for the first time live. You can go to my website and sign up for my weekly newsletter. It's an email newsletter. And in that, we even have some nutritional stuff. We have a nutritionist that provides us a fat-burning recipe every month. And so you get that as part of our newsletter, and it's free. You can sign up and email. You can cancel at any time, and it's a great way to get information that we maybe didn't have time to report on the show. I usually have that in my newsletter. And also, if you're the kind of person who likes to invest on your own and you're looking for some financial planning software to kind of manage your retirement, we also have an offer through the company that did our software, and it's called, you can go to www.makeretirementsimple2.com. That's makeretirementsimple2.com, and that's the number 2.com. And that is the same software that I use with my planning, and you can get that at a very reasonable price. In fact, way lower than you could at other places. So it's a good program, and we find it's a program where you can plug in Social Security, you can plug in your RMDs, and it'll actually show you how your RMDs accelerate the older you get. And so that's one of the things that people kind of forget about is when you hit 70 and a half, that clock starts running. And the IRS doesn't give you any grace on that, do they, Kevin?
Not so much. There's a little bit of a get-out-of-jail-free letter if you happen to miss a deadline, but that's not a conversation you really want to have.
Yeah, and you better have a good reason.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Kevin, we will be talking to you next week.
Yep.
I'll be in studio next week for sure. We appreciate all you listeners. Thanks for calling. If you got any questions, just email me, askchuck@pfgwm.com. We'll be back on the air next Saturday. And for you people that listen to us on tape delayed, you can always catch us live on Saturday morning, 8 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time. And that would be 11 a.m. on the Eastern Daylight Time. So we'll be back next Saturday. Kevin, have a busy, great week.
You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified or sign up for our free newsletter at www.pfgwm.com. This show was brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000 or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated.
Hi, everybody. Chuck Price, the financial doctor here. If you're between ages 58 and 68, choosing Social Security benefits at the right time is one of the biggest financial decisions you'll ever make. You get one chance to get it right. After 12 months, there are no do-overs. 74% of Americans receive reduced benefits. Get your free report on 44 Social Security secrets at pfgwm.com. Social Security is often one of the largest and most mismanaged assets in your retirement income plan. Claiming benefits sounds easy. So is leaving up to $250,000 of your money with the government, or reducing your benefits up to 76% over your life expectancy. For this vital information, go online to pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
We do investing simplified.